Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. I am your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Julianne Ryan, and we speak with her about her unique book, The Learned It in Queen's Communication Playbook, Winning Against Digital Distraction.
My inner voice piped up and said, you know, you're going to have to keep it authentic and just show up as you are. And that was the biggest gift I gave to myself. Because when you grew up in Queens, you were always saying you were from Manhattan. You didn't quite emphasize the borough because we were all the outliers, which I talk about in my book. And doing that and just owning where I was and starting to use that as an inspiration for the book, I didn't say the speech wrote itself, but it started to really give me clues about how I could connect with the audience and get them to look up and pay attention to their communication.
Julianne is a humorist, storytelling speaker, facilitator and coach who is on a mission to connect her audiences with themselves and each other, one authentic conversation and humorous story at a time. She uses humor to disrupt and interrupt assumptions so her audiences can learn how to listen. Storytelling and sharing holds a special place in her work, whether she's giving a keynote or facilitating a workshop. Her storytelling programs are designed to disrupt behaviors and perspectives, teach listening and feedback skills in an entertaining manner. The result? Participants learned to see each other in a fresh way, and this lays the foundation for building trust, collaboration, and productivity. Change doesn't happen in a day, but her process gives it a good kick forward. Now, on to this thought-provoking episode with Julianne Ryan. Julianne, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so happy to have you in the show and to talk to you about Learned It in Queens. You know, when I first read the title of the book, I obviously didn't get it. Because I'm not from this part of the world. I'm from so I know if you're possibly from the US or you're a New Yorker, you'll get it like that. And I've been to Queens, but it didn't connect at all in my head till I actually went in. So this is delightful, and I'm so happy that you are here today.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's the world's longest title. It started its life as my expression when I was doing something common sense or connecting with somebody and learning about different. I would always say I learned it in Queens. And when I ultimately start to write the book, it was a Learned in Queens communication playbook. And then my wonderful editor I used the first time says, you need a tagline. So it was winning against digital transformation. So if you read this title a few times, your lung capacity will improve and it'll even be a holistic health technique. And next time I'm going to write a shorter title because it's exhausting just typing it into any chat and any information. So thank you. Yes, Learned It in Queens Communications Playbook.
Before we actually dive into the book, very simple question is, what made you write this?
Very good question. It didn't start as a book. The concept started as a complaint to myself. When I was working in human resources, when I was watching people interact in New York, when I was commuting to my office. And then I've also been married for decades, and I started to mumble to myself quite a bit about how we all get in trouble. We make assumptions about our communications. We think somebody understood what we said or wrote or texted. And then the interesting parts of our conversations start. People get angry, people get frustrated, and they think, well, you should understand me. Part two to this experience is when somebody had a conversation with me in New York when I was organizing an event and thought I would make a good keynote speaker. I had already been coaching and doing workshops, and he invited me to present at a very large conference in the West. And I did not realize at that point, because nobody gave me much details, that it was going to be to 500 executives, and I would be standing in front of three jumbotron screens on a stage. quite different than my vision of just walking around and chit-chatting in an audience of maybe 100 or 200. And my first reaction was, oh my God, they're going to see this short little middle-aged woman. Who is she? They're going to hear my Queen's accent. Why is she here? She doesn't have big, huge titles. And my inner voice piped up and said, you know, you're going to have to keep it authentic and just show up as you are. And that was the biggest gift I gave to myself. Because when you grew up in Queens, you were always saying you were from Manhattan. You didn't quite emphasize the borough because we were all the outliers, which I talk about in my book. And doing that and just owning where I was and starting to use that as an inspiration for the book, I didn't say the speech wrote itself, but it started to really give me clues about how I could connect with the audience and get them to look up and pay attention to their communication. Now, you know, an executive type A, he's in the room, but he's usually, or her, is on their device. They're worried about something else. So to sustain eye contact with an entire room and get them laughing and then talking to each other was an accomplishment. Now, in the Hollywood version of this conversation, I would say, well, then I went home and wrote the book. Everything was fine and it happened instantly. And that was the naive assumption I had for maybe 2 years. I thought I had great slides. I had a concept. It worked. But what worked on the stage didn't work on the page. So I have to be honest with you, there were 62 introductions drafts before I finally settled onto what we talked about earlier. Sometimes we try to over-engineer what we're trying to say. And I realized the essence of what I want to do is have a conversation with you, with others about, you know what, we're all in this boat together. We get it wrong, no matter how well-intentioned we are, and we got to get out of our own way. So it's like having me in your ear with a Queen's accent.
You know, we talk a lot these days, especially if you're on LinkedIn like me and you are. Lot of times we hear this word being authentic. And you use that word just now. I get it. Anybody, if you tell be authentic, I mean, you get it. You get the sense. But as a communicator, and this is where being authentic comes across to the other person most when you're communicating with somebody, right? So as a communicator, what do you think is being authentic?
I think, and I'm using me as the beta site example, I have worked hard to sometimes suppress my Queen's accent, but it comes whipping back when I say TH and R words. As much as I haven't even lived in the borough, I'm in the metro area, but haven't right. lived. And it comes up. Instead of critiquing myself, it's like, that's part of me. I can't change my cultural background, you know, where I came from, the house. So I think we live in a society, especially in the West, where we want perfectly curated images of what an individual is supposed to be. And when they are talented or when they grow up and when they mature. And I am advising people, the more we can appreciate our own story and what informed us, the good, the bad, and the ugly, we'll be in a better place to listen to each other, to pay attention to what your experiences are, and to have some empathy. And that's my version of being authentic, appreciating myself now after decades, and then being ready to listen and appreciate where you're coming from and what's informing your opinion. And I have to say, after I did this book and this speech, it just infused me with more energy and more confidence to just be, not come in worried. Do I worry about an audience? Of course. Do I worry about what I'm working on? Of course, I want to do my best. But I have had the most amazing conversations and connections because I finally took a step back and just was who I was.
Yeah, this is so easy to sort of get the way you explain. And by the way, I'm from India, so don't talk about my accent at all. Okay? I get it. I mean, it's a different spin, but it's sort of the same story.
I understand.
It's the same story. Coming back to the
I mean, I'll come back to this empathy bit also, because we are talking a lot about empathy these days. So I'll come back to you on that later. But let's move on about the book. So you went to this keynote where this 500 people were there, and you did the keynote. Where did it transition, saying that you know all these things that I've been doing, and these notes that I've been making, and the content that I've been building for these events and lectures actually should be in a book, and people can use it?
Yeah, here's my advice. If you're going to test a concept out, it's really good if you do it ahead of time. I did it in real time on the stage. There was,
right.
I performed it for a few small groups of people, but basically that was my breakout. So it had to work. But one of the things behind the scenes and in my head when I was doing it, I had people from everywhere in the country at different perspectives. And I wanted to find something that we all had in common and make it relatable, and also not be yelling at people and making them feel bad about themselves. I feel we're in a better place to learn if we can chuckle at ourselves and say, oh my God, you do that too? I'm like that. I didn't think anybody else did that when they're making a phone call and nobody calls them back. I mean, I have a whole scene about that when I used to get angry at some coach, you know, like clients or employees. We all, we do crazy things. But I like what you said about empathic, and you just brought up a very important thing about accents. Queens, I was excited when I met somebody who was actually from the States for more than one generation. I used to say, well, how'd your family pull that off? Like, most people I know here have either newly arrived or haven't been here that long. So our accent and our relationship with language is much different. Mm. I've mentioned in the book, I'm married to a man from Dublin. And when I met him, he thought, well, you're not falling over my accent like every other girl is. And I was like, accents, like accents coming out of my head. You're one of many that I have to translate and figure it out. But the beauty of that, and that's why I'm saying Queens taught me a lot of lessons when I finally gave myself permission to pay attention, is we in Queens, we always had to figure out what somebody was saying and their own take on expressions. And Christopher Walken's talks about that. He's another Queens native. He has that very stilted acting style that wasn't just from an acting class. It was him. He said when he was growing up in Astoria, Queens, he was also trying to figure out the nuances of people's language. So you have to do much more of a pause and make sure you got it, or at least as best as you can. So that's where the lessons were coming from. And I remember when I saw that, it was like somebody gave me the Rosetta Stone. I was like, oh my God, Christopher Walken's finally explained how we talk and why we're always like using our hands and being energetic. We're trying to pay attention to the nuances of what's happening.
Right. So explain to me a little bit about the process. How did you put this all together? How did you structure it? What process? You told me there are 62 drafts, so I'm really worried.
I'm not going to walk you through the 62 drafts. Was in summary, I spent some time trying to intellectualize and introduce myself. I'm going to have psychological association, you know, footnotes and links to sites and academic journals that back me up. Then I'm like, well, you can't start the way you did on the stage because they don't know why you're talking to them. So I had to figure out how to introduce myself to the reading audience. And I started basically complaining and saying, I've been trying to figure this out. I give a glossary of terms. So almost like a primer that my first editor was based in Ohio, had his family read around the dinner table at night. So I basically corrupted a whole family of well-speaking, English-speaking people in Ohio because of this book. But it was taking a poke at how can I meet you and what's the goal? And again, it was about having a conversation and let's get together to get out of our own way. And then, okay, this is, I have to give the same editor, Tom Sparrow, credit. I gave this in COVID when we all had time to figure out some life projects when we were working and things shut down. I was like, if this is not a sign from the spirits to do this. So I did it. I made all my changes and I handed it off. And I thought, he's just going to edit it and correct my punctuation. And then he wrote me a very important note. Julian, I finished the draft. I want you to take a breath in a moment when you read this, because I've reordered your book. Well, I'd like to tell you I was smiling and happy. I was thinking, he's taken my child. He's reorganized. How is that going to work? The speech worked. The order worked. And then I read it. And he was right. It made more sense the way he organized some of the chapters. And that was another lesson about collaboration and calling on other people to be part of the creative process. That book didn't happen because I was just by myself. It was people who were kind enough to read it. He was editing. Everyone got into the act. Even a colleague of mine at the end, I wanted to get a quote from her. And she said, well, I left her flat. I just ended the book. She was like, you didn't say goodbye. And again, I had a moment. I thought, man, is this thing ever going to be over? And I looked for the gift and I went, okay, so I'm going to write a goodbye at the end. And I did a Queens goodbye about what it takes when we used to leave our house in Queens, and it would take a half hour because everybody would be like trying to give you food and asking you directions and making sure you call. So it ended up being banter. So every lesson and every grumbling moment became something better. And that is the Queen's accent coming in loud volume right now. So yeah, it was about learning and figuring out and getting out of my own way, which was huge.
Yeah, I think that's such a wonderful story. Again, before we move into the book, last question is, what was your writing process? I mean, did you have an idea and then you said, okay, I can, this makes sense, I should write it down? Or was it something else?
Can I use it like school where we say E, all the above? it depends. Sometimes I'm writing when I'm talking to myself, taking a walk in the neighborhood. Sometimes I'm writing in my head first when I'm cooking, which happens a lot every day. I wake up in the middle of the night and then I hope I can remember what I thought of that sounded mildly intelligent. So it depends. And sometimes I actually do what you're supposed to do or we're told to do is sit on the computer and make some notes. I have terrible handwriting, so a lot of me has to be typing. So as much as I grumble about our cell phones, it has been a saving grace so I can capture some notes. I'm using that process. I'm giving a talk this weekend at a conference, a mini talk about the book and another book I was part of. And that is my process. I always started, I got nothing. And then finally, after arguing myself, an idea will come and I go, I got something. I can use this.
Yeah. Great. So let's kick off a little bit, actually talking about the book and I would suggest that we start with the primer that you start the book with. So let's hear a bit about the primer and let's learn a few words.
If and when you read the book, we're going to say positive, like you would say close. When you read the book, you're going to understand how to pronounce forget about it. Did you know? It's three words. Did you know? But when you're talking to a fellow Queens person, you're going to mush them all together. And then another common one that I know from friends who I've just seen over the weekend. What are you kidding me? When somebody says something that's so surreal and you think you need to go back and check the facts, check where you're coming from and really pull yourself together. So, and in that sentence, three other expressions came to mind. The playbook has 10, 8 basic rules of communications. And I am proud to say psychiatrists have read this book and said, you know, you're right. People who do communications at the highest level said, you're right. But I parse it down and keep it simple of what gets us into trouble and some simple things we can do to get out of our way. Things like this, showing up, spending time to meet with somebody face to face so we can look at the nuances, listen to the notes in their voice, and do more, not in this case, in my case here, but usually more listening than talking.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
So we sometimes get so locked into our emotions and expectations of the moment, and we think it's more important to get words out than pausing and maybe not sending, you know, a message, not picking up the phone in that instant, to take a breath and just say that maybe there's another way for me to look at that dialogue or that interaction. Just like when that editor sent me a note to say, think about your work and your thing that you hold so dear in a different way. Where's the gift? What am I not thinking about? And maybe people don't need to hear my unedited reaction in this moment.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
Listening is a lost art, sort of. We are in this whole attention deficit world where our ability to listen is really, it's a challenge and it's a big problem. When you talk of ADHD and stuff like that, it is not because, I mean, we all have some amount of that in us, but a lot of it is getting accentuated because of the kind of life we are leading, technology usage and what kind of, but again, it's a topic for another day. Let's talk about these 8 principles that you sort of boiled down the communication playbook to, and let's touch upon a few. I will let you choose what you want to talk about and sort of elaborate on how they impact your ability to communicate.
Well, we already touched on one, keep it authentic, so we don't need to go back there. A big one is when stuck, try something new. And I use the 7 train, which goes from flushing the heart of a very popular multicultural area in Queens into New York. And it was always stuck. It was always moving slowly. You're always crammed together. So we sometimes get so locked into our emotions and expectations of the moment. And we think it's more important to get words out than pausing and maybe not sending, you know, a message, not picking up the phone in that instant, to take a breath and just say that maybe there's another way for me to look at that dialogue or that interaction. Just like when that editor sent me a note to say, think about your work and your thing that you hold so dear in a different way. Where's the gift? What am I not thinking about? And maybe people don't need to hear my unedited reaction in this moment. So that's one of them. Hold on to your inner child, because who among us doesn't lose it? So I use a lot of creative analogies in the book, but we write our own script. We are our own script writers when we're reading something, we're reacting. We might be carrying a negative conversation we just had with somebody prior. So when we're meeting somebody or reading something, we have that dialogue and that energy in that paper. So holding on to a reaction is a big theme about when we think we are right away. And it might not be the case. And here's a shocker. Sometimes it's us. I know And I said that to all those executives, and I say that to myself every day when I'm looking at my own copy on my desk. Sometimes it's us. We've jumped to conclusions. And if you don't believe, my husband will say, sometimes we need to tell each other. And that's the hardest training ground in your personal relationships that you live with every day. But it's sometimes it's us. And maybe what we're angry about or concerned about, isn't that freaking important?
Yeah.
And is it worth getting that invested in it? So stepping away and just giving that person a chance. And I think that's the other thing I want to build on this. So many times when I was giving workshops or talking to people in employee relations, I joke about I spent way too much time at lawyers. And when I spent time with them, what it whittled down to is someone stopped listening. Somebody stopped paying attention or taking the chance to show up. And we could have saved so much time and money if we didn't do that. We just paused and gave that person another chance. And we're in a world where we're wrestling, we're reteaching ourselves new ways to appreciate people's experiences with our, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, and bias. We can teach, we can show by stories and examples. But the learning's not going to make sense if we don't give a space for someone to say, now I get it. I need to recraft how I use words, how you're receiving them, and give them what we call in New York or in Queens a do-over, a chance to start again and rebuild that relationship. And I've been the beneficiary of many people in my life who gave me a moment of direction. And then I was able to reroute and say, I never thought of it that way. So if there's anything I want people to have out of this book is how do we give ourselves and others a do-over and say, let's get better, let's improve.
Yeah, that also brings to a critical decision where, you know, so it cannot be an unending series of do-overs. You also have to move on at some point.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the judgment that you need to make. But I totally get it. And I think pausing before reacting to something and pausing to think. And I totally agree, because so many times we are so convinced that we know the whole story when we don't. Mm-hmm. And our assumptions are coming out of our knowledge, right? Of, okay, this is what Julian did and this is what she must have done. And so I don't know the story. Actually, I do not know what is going on in your mind, that there is a perfectly rational explanation of what you did, which sort of offended me. And it was not intended to offend me. It was really what it was, so kind of stuff.
And you bring up a question before about your process. And as I'm going through it, I'm realizing, I don't know if it was a formalized process, intentional, is when I was writing the lengthy draft that took forever, and even the speech, the original speech, I would tell people what I was up to, and I would be talking to somebody on the phone, a colleague, a friend, and I was like, okay, I'm talking about this, and they would share an example that was so good, I'm like, oh my god, I have to include this does more than what I could explain, and it just exactly brought it to life, because the humanness part of it about getting in trouble or a business situation that almost went south because of assumptions or people stopped listening or emails weren't getting through. So it was, when I say it was a collective life, it was lots of people got involved in this book, whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so natural, because none of us know everything. It's just like when you are passionate about this topic and you go out, everybody has a kernel in their head about it, but it's not important enough for them to really talk about it or champion it and so on. But when you sort of connect and say, oh my God, Julian, this is what happens. I know. And exactly. I totally get what you're saying. Let's touch upon that point of empathy and how empathy impacts your ability, or not only impacts but actually enhances, if you can mm-hmm. internalize that, how it impacts your communication.
I can tell you where the roots were of empathy. I was incredibly shy to the point of didn't talk for a few years when I was a kid. I mean, it's amazing now, but it's true. I was the youngest in a neighborhood where everybody was adults and growing up, and in some tough situations in school that were not pleasant for years. But it made me an observer of bodies and behaviors and clues. So what started out is sometimes a painful negative, I repurposed. And it showed me in a lot of situations, empathy starts with being quiet, experiencing the person just sitting there, their presence, not putting a stopwatch on what's happening. And empathy is, again, doing more listening. And it's about appreciating. We can, if someone gives you the gift of a sharing of something that was challenging, it's not always needed our responsibility to try to fix the situation or weigh in and be directive. It's the act of listening and being there for that person to just be truthful and saying what's informing their perspective and decision. And I think putting ourselves in somebody's shoes and allowing them to teach us is the beginning of good dialogues. I was speaking to someone yesterday that said one of the things they've been had on their docket was to do mentorship in their company. They've been talking about it for years. However, the root of mentorship is the ability to listen and hear the other person's perspective, and then offer maybe guidance or suggestions or keep an active ear open for how the mentor can champion that relation and offer support. Sometimes that's the biggest gift, being there to be someone, a sounding board for somebody. So I think it's the listening again.
I think that's a very good point, a segue to talk about your chapter on how the brain works when you are communicating. I think we, if you can touch upon that, I think it'll add to what we are what you just mentioned.
It's not that I use silence. I think when we're listening, we're writing the script. Think about an old movie things. We're listening, and the hardest thing sometimes for us to do is really be in the conversation. Leave the other conversations we had behind, not be completing our sentences in our next response in the moment, even though that's natural. Sometimes in a meeting that's expected, but just pay more attention. The brain, when we connect with stories, which is something we're leaning towards, is an amazing thing. If we share a story with emotion and fact, that's true. I encourage you to look at your listeners around you, and you will see them leaning in and their body languages change. Because at that same time, your story is probably going to get fixated into the bottom of their primitive memory scale because it's resonated with them. So instead of throwing facts at people, you must, and this is wise, connecting people with a story that's real. Doesn't have to be for an hour. To be a metaphor and analogy that really represents something you believe in is important. The other important thing about story is our brain thinks in like those old school movie screens when they used to film movies and have, you know, there was dialogue on one screen and then the bottom somebody was talking. It was like very old fashioned films. When you're connecting with a story that's resonating with somebody and you're really shown that you're listening, your brain is like a film director. It's giving you your examples. Now, it's not always the right time to share and play, well, you have that problem, well, I've had this problem. That person deserves you just to listen. But it does show how the brain dredges up moments of connection. And that is where we start to build trust and understanding. I'm not saying we're all going to be best friends in our work or personal relationships with people we meet in our community, but we won't treat the person the same way once they have shared something real about them or made a connection. I guarantee you, I'm willing to bet on it, I'm not a betting woman, that you will respond to that person differently because that person listened to you and paid attention. And I think that's 99% of our challenges in the workplace, whether it's virtual and in person, we think we're getting more done by sending out a terse text, by sending out, if we spend more time, which I write about, a little more time in our world, waste time to save time in the back end, it will save you time and money. And I saw proof of that in many situations in my work.
Wonderful. Julian, is there anything in the book that you'd like to touch upon for the listeners?
I believe in humans. We have 90% of us have good intentions and we're working hard to do the right thing. Or in our relationships, to give other people the chance. And one of the expressions I coined was front stoop moments. If you ever look at a picture of some Queens houses in the old neighborhoods, they had steps in front of the houses. And that word stoop is a carryover from when the Dutch were here. That we change everything in New York, but we still use that word. And what I thought about when I was writing the book is that taught me, when you sit on the front stoop, you're side by side with somebody, you're at the same level, more or less, you're observing the world together. So to find places you can do that, whether it's at a conference table where you don't sit at the opposite end, maybe you walk around the park, maybe you sit on a bench and talk with somebody, to have in your space versus in your face dialogues, where you're bringing all your assumptions and an agenda that's already been written and delivered in your head. So I think small moments matter. And it helps with intergenerational to bring people in. You're a big believer in engagement. I know you have systems and that's your core world. If you want something to engage, it becomes with us stepping forward first to give our time and give our listeners and be interested and generally interested in the other person. That's the gift of networking. Networking is, hey, what are you going to give me? Are you going to call me and give me business? It's an investment of time and genuine curiosity and collaboration a lot of times.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I think to be human more and not just purely, I mean, life is not transactional. I mean, that's such a shallow way of living a life if you're living a life of transactions, right?
And I'm sure you agree, since you're traveling a lot and I call it story tourism, that when we come from a different place, when we're tourists, we see architecture and people with a fresh eye. I got to travel this summer and I saw beautiful buildings in Spain, and I went to Morocco, and saying the more we think people are different, the more they're the same. So when you do story tourism, you're showing up to pay attention. And I'm sure you're doing that every conference that you part of, and meet your new customers and get curious. And it's not a one and done. I think it's an amazing thing. That's where technology can help us stay connected, that it isn't just a transaction. Show up in a genuine way in some shape or form, even if it's a thumbs up on your LinkedIn profile.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Julian, this was a delight. Literally, I mean, I'm so happy.
Thank you.
We had this conversation and I look forward to having more conversations with you. And I'm sure we'll have the opportunity and I'll be able to entice you. It was not too bad for you this session, so I'll be able to entice you back.
And I'll tell you, I would be thrilled, because I didn't get to ask my favorite questions, because I am addicted to backstories. So I didn't get to ask you, why are you doing this podcast? What made you do this? Where did it start? So that's the role I love. So yes, there's so many things we need to exchange and learn. And it's not just me and a book. It's a bigger purpose to really absolutely, build community absolutely, and absolutely. Really get enthusiastic. So thank you for letting me into your tribe.
You're most welcome, and you're welcome to stay.
Yes, thank you. That's hard. I would love to.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.